You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
So, what are you guys going to do? Are you going to continue to be a bunch of soft, underperforming, tattooed millionaires?
They said all along, perfection is not possible. We just want to get the big decisions right.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
Green room getting hot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
The right answer was a goal in Times Square so we could do butts up. But that was an easy one.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from Brooklyn, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio, driven by ContinentalMLSsoccer.com. We are in the terrarium, the green...
Greenhouse.
The greenhouse. Thank you. Thank you. My backyard. Surrounded by bumblebees, plants, I've decided right now, right here, that if you are stung, dive-bombed, or buzzed by the bumblebee, that is the equivalency of the radiator from back in the day. So make your points accordingly. If you see it coming around, be choosy about what you say, Bobby Warshaw. Do you know about the radiator? Is that part of ETR history that's going right over your head?
Yeah, I know the radiator. But we're going to replace the radiator with the squash and the pumpkin on either side of us today?
I don't think those are going to fall, and I don't think they're going to make any noise.
They're pretty huge.
Yeah, they're massive. Like, subsistence gardening is very real in this part of Brooklyn. I mean, we are being encroached upon by, I'm going to guess, 15-foot, I don't know what those are, vines, trees, bushes. Not a horticulture expert here, but...
We guarantee we have one in our listener base.
Probably. We'll probably get a good email about that. It's Heineken Rivalry Week, in case you didn't know that, in case you missed Wednesday night's kickoff at Yankee Stadium. The New York Derby going down, the third matchup this year in the regular season. The Red Bulls won in Open Cup action, but it doesn't really matter because neither of them made the final. 1-1 draw. We'll get to that in just a little bit, but we got to remind you, this goes all the way through Sunday. Thursday, Chicago and Columbus get it started at 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN+. Houston, Dallas, that's the nightcap on Unimas at 9 p.m. Eastern. You can also watch that one live on Twitter if that's what you want to do. Maybe you're out and about. Friday and Sunday, doubleheaders. Friday's doubleheaders on ESPN, Orlando, Atlanta, and then you got El Trafico. Sunday, D.C. and New York, the Atlantic Cup, a busy week for the Red Bulls. And then Portland and Seattle, and then Saturday, Toronto, Montreal, massive game for the playoffs, six-pointer for sure, 8 p.m. Eastern, and then Colorado RSL as well on ESPN+. So check those out. I mean, this one is it's better than years past. Because we don't have three Heineken Rivalry Weeks. And maybe that will come back, but I vastly prefer the 1 week, put your eggs in one basket, don't mess around with kind of the dilution of the brand. We're getting at it this week, and it's the perfect timing, too, because so many of these games have huge implications going toward the playoffs. And certainly Red Bulls in New York City had that. Shield, maybe CONCACAF Champions League, depending on what Atlanta United do. Playoff positioning. It had it all, and then it went absolutely crazy.
It had
crazy.
It all except the good soccer.
There you go.
It had a lot of it. But it one of the things it did not have was aesthetically pleasing football. I don't know why
what
I said that in
that?
Accent, guys.
What
yeah, that was weird.
Like, did you, like, throw in the Western?
That. There's, like, one
he,
thing I say.
He was a Texas A&M Euro snob.
Yeah. There's one thing I say on every ETR that I regret immediately, and I just, like, generally ask Goss to cut. So that's
the one. I appreciate you got that one out at the beginning.
And if it made it in,
also, you're not supposed to say how the sausage is made.
Well, Goss rarely cuts it.
Yeah,
so.
That's true. Yeah. Normally we're like, no, that's staying in. That's absolutely must be given to the people at home. What'd you make of the game outside of the bad football, as you said it? It's like an SEC head
yeah,
coach.
I'm embarrassed right now. I hate myself in this moment.
We were there. Dave and I were there for Extra Time Live.
Wanna...
If you missed that, go check it out. Some good stuff there, at least to get the feel for what was going on pregame.
What I would say, what I would guess you guys would say about this game is that it was fun. It was exciting because there wasn't a ton of passing. There wasn't a ton of the kind of soccer we generally like from NYCFC, or at least we have in the past. But when you're live at a game, that doesn't matter. My guess is this game live was awesome because it was energetic, it was intense, and passing doesn't matter as much when you're in the stadium.
That's an interesting way to think about it that I honestly hadn't really thought about, in that the difference between what you appreciate in stadium and on TV as it pertains to the quote-unquote quality of the play on the field.
Well,
because you're right. When I watched it, I was like, this is hectic. It's a little bit, you know, it's a little sloppy. But it had enough moments where, like, you felt this tension escalate, or you felt the emotion escalate, or there was a big moment and you were trying to figure out what was going on, because when you're not watching on TV, unless you're watching Ted Uncle, you're not seeing him go to the monitor to review a play. And you're like, oh, is that a red card? Why is that a red card? Let's figure it out. Let's talk. Let's see what these fans are doing.
When you're at the game, also, you hear the crowd. You're reacting to the crowd.
Right.
So like Bobby's saying, direct play where there's the ball's around the 18 is when crowds react and crowds yell and free kicks and controversial fouls and stuff like that. So, like, that's what you feel in the stadium. But you could feel how sloppy it was. Like,
yeah,
there were
obvious
moments where, like, balls would come back out to, like, Davis and Adams' foot, and they would try and, like, clip a first-time ball over the, like, middle of the field, and it went to no one. And for me, watching Red Bulls the whole second half, they would win the ball back. They'd play it out to Kaku on the right side, and he would play a ball down the line into, like, space. And it's like, you guys are one or two guys up. Why not play to feet and, like, create and try and find an opening?
I'm guessing it's the exact conversation they're having in their film session right now,
yeah,
based on all their quotes after the game.
And, by the way, their film sessions are epic. Bobby and I went to training to talk to them on Tuesday. What time did training start? We got there at 11, and usually training starts at 10 a.m.
Yep.
We got there at 11. We did not get to the field to watch them train until, like, 1.
They went out at, like, 12:30, 12:45.
And they were done at, like, 3?
Yep.
I mean, it was a marathon session.
Here's what I would say about this game in terms of the soccer. And I got the chance to talk to Chris Armas at that training session a little bit and just got a feel for how they see the season going so far. And I think both of these teams are in, we want to win MLS Cup, and we feel confident we'll make the playoffs. So these 10 games are about improving ourselves for the playoffs and increasing our probability of winning in the playoffs. They'd love to win Supporter Shield, but especially Red Bulls. I mean, Red Bulls have Supporter Shields. They want MLS Cup. I think their fan base probably wants MLS Cup. So, yeah, last night wasn't gorgeous, but I think that they'll each come out of this game feeling okay about it because they tried some things, they took a lump, and it's something to learn from.
Do you think the Red Bulls feel okay about it? Like, they play against a team that had 10 men for basically 50 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of stoppage time, too. So you're talking probably 60 minutes, a whole hour.
Right.
You basically played up two men for the last 20 minutes of this game.
So the way I'd answer that is that we all know the experience of something bothers you on the surface, and then something bothers you deep down. It's like on your shoulders while when you walk around and you walk to work. I would say this is like the surface. They're pissed. They're angry. They know they should have done better. But in the grand scheme of things, they feel okay because they feel like there's something to be taken in the long term.
What are they taking? That's what I'm getting at here, because like interacting with them off the field, it was clear that they were pretty, like, I don't know if it was a core pain, like you're saying, like deep in the heart, but it was definitely an obvious missed opportunity for a lot of different reasons. Not just because it's 3 points, not just because it's the rivalry, not because this was the rubber match, but because this was in a lot of ways what we've come to expect from Red Bulls in big high-stake games in the playoffs. They have advantages. You expect them to win. You're waiting for the moment when they find that whatever, that cutting pass or that moment where they get the turnover, and a team with fewer men packs it in a little bit and says, okay, break us down.
Can I just say, that's where it felt different, actually, because the issue for the Red Bulls in the past has been in the final third, when teams do pack it in and let them dominate possession in the final third and they can't create. This was actually in transition, because NYCFC was going for it for large stretches of the second half.
Actually looked more dangerous.
But Red Bulls got opportunities to break back. So that's what was frustrating in watching, was this is where they want the ball. This is where they do thrive when they're 11v11. Why 9v11 or 10v11 are they not taking advantage of these moments? It wasn't.
No, you're right.
NYCFC putting 10 behind the ball,
yep,
and Red Bulls going from the right sideline to Adams' foot to the left sideline back, and Kleshchen clipping that ball over from Kleshchen the top of the
AT. Kleshchen looking around and like putting his hands up, like, where's my runners? What's going on?
Exactly.
Okay, so and I'm thinking back to some of those plays, and I think in particular to one where they're on the break. Danny Royer is cutting into the box. He's got on his left foot. He could take the shot, and he's like, what do I do? What do I do? Push it to BWP, and nothing comes of it. I just look at this game for them and for Chris Armas in particular, and like what I would take away from that game is that this isn't right now the form that we would need to be in to be an MLS Cup contender. Like, if you are going to win MLS Cup, you take advantage of the red card, then the second red card, and you don't allow a team playing down a man and down two men to be the aggressor at times, because that's not what you need.
So touching on what we talked about on Monday, though, their ability to control the ball and dominate games when they're the better team. We talked about it in terms of opponents. When you're playing Chicago Fire, different than when you're playing Atlanta, where Atlanta is going to do what they do because they're a great team and they want to impose themselves on games. Obviously, they don't want to dominate possession. And then New York Red Bulls can react to that and win games. And then we were saying in games where they can't react because they're the ones who are supposed to put their foot forward and control the game, that's where they struggle. This game ended up becoming one of those games because NYCFC went man down. And so then, even though you're on the road and you're against a great team, it became, okay, can Red Bulls control the game? And this is what Armas was talking about. I assume this is something he mentioned to you when he first took over, which is, I want to be better in possession. I want us to be able to have the ball more.
So keep to cut you off there.
Yeah.
Having talked to him, his point was that we want more possession. It was not that we want more possession. It was not that we want more passes. It was to refine what you said or to narrow in what you said. We want to be better in possession, but that does not mean more passes. So I just want to point that out. It's just not that when we get the ball, because they've been so focused on this is how we press, this is how we do these things, and we're going to do them perfectly. And now he says, okay, so we're really good at those. Now can we refine that when we're on the ball? And I think there's growing pains associated with that. So I look at this game and they'll say, okay, this is a game we actually need to be better on the ball. We weren't. Where weren't we? And then we can take that to the training field.
So, by the way, I had to drag Bobby off the training field as he was talking to Chris Armas after training.
Yeah, I was so mad at you.
Yeah, the Uber was there, and I could tell he was trying to ignore me, and I'm like, Bobby, we truly have to leave here. You've never seen bigger puppy dog eyes than in that case. At NYCFC on Monday, saves Domi Trent. At Red Bulls on Tuesday, he's got his film out.
It was
out,
a good week. It was
he's
a really good
he's
week.
Got his film out. Who needs a center back? Bobby Warshaw is available. I think Red Bulls also should be a little frustrated because the goal they gave up is probably one that – again, going back to the film room, they'll look at and say, wait, we didn't track David Villa running into zone 14. Mm-hmm. Bobby's doing a little shifty eyes here, so I'm just wondering what he saw. I mean, direct ball, Brigitte's head, old 8-minute Brigitte.
Well, I was just thinking how interesting narratives are, right? Because this was a Luis Robles mess up. Yeah. But I've seen a lot of tweets today like, man, how fantastic is David Villa? He'd made something out of nothing. I'd be like, no, he shot a ball from 20-some yards into a goalkeeper's arms that the goalkeeper dropped. And I just think it's interesting when that happens. But, yeah, this is Robles messing up, and he acknowledged it. And
is there nothing for Aaron Long to look at on this play? Just in the sense of, like, direct ball goes to the top, Long's with Villa, that's his mark. Brigitte heads it back, and Villa's in open space. Like, Long just takes a split second to react, and that split second is all Villa needed.
Yeah, but I also think that there's a lot of those mistakes that happen in a game. It's just we only pay attention to the ones where the ball goes through the goalie's hands.
And to be fair, Luis Robles, in an interview afterwards on our show, said, yeah, this was on me. I should have saved that. That's not a great moment for me at this point. Mm-hmm. Should NYCFC fans be concerned? Should Domi Trent be concerned? One win in five.
Yeah. We should point out that they came out in a 3-5-2.
Yeah.
Right? That Red Bulls played their 4-2-3-1 that they almost always play. And NYCFC came out in a 3-5-2. Ben Sweat at left center back. Ebenezer Ofori at left back. And Aramot.
Left wing back.
Left wing back, correct. And the new signing, Aramot, at center midfield. So this was a totally new...
Aramot? Amagat.
Amagat.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I mean, I biffed that last night, too.
No. Thank you. So this was them trying something even different. I mean, this is now 4, 5, maybe 6 different formation system styles, whatever you want to call it, in the last 5 or 6 games. And I'm just interested... I really can't tell you if that's a good thing or a bad thing. For me, it's a bad thing because they haven't been good at any of them, and I don't know what they're building towards. But I thought that was an interesting wrinkle in last night's game.
I look at this team, and when they don't have Medina on the field, they're a completely different team.
Are we going to talk about that, too?
What the rumors about Nice?
The fact that he wasn't in the 18?
Yeah, but they said it was injury.
And Patrick Vieira said he was staying. Like,
I'll just say that if
Domi Trent did come out and say that there's nothing official about those rumors, they haven't actually received anything. But again, Patrick Vieira said he was staying, so believe what you want to believe.
I'll just say if they don't have Medina, the way they play, they can't win MLS Cup without him on the field. So I understand the idea of trying new things, having a plan B. Because when they don't have Medina, there's no one that pulls the defense wide, and there's no one that creates on the outside, and there's not enough room for Villa and Maxi Morales to operate. And so when you watch the Philly game last weekend with Brigitte out wide, he like comes in and wants to play as a second forward with Villa, and it's a completely different team than the team that started this year really well and the team the last 2 years with Jack Harrison out wide, where – you've got a consistent option out wide. It pulls the defense a little bit more, so Villa has more gaps to run into. And now Morales is doing what Lampard did, which is finding that second run through that gap as well. And no one right now in NYCFC except Medina is capable of pulling that team out wide.
Look, there's something interesting here going on. If these two teams finish second and third, and that's where they stand right now, Atlanta United, the big winner of last night's action, they would potentially match up at the semifinals. Because you're talking about whichever would finish third, taking on the sixth place team at home. Both these teams are nails in their home stadium.
Does it get reseeded after the one single elimination play-in game? So if like a 5 and a 6 qualify, does the 6 play the 1 and the 5 play?
We haven't gotten the official playoff dates.
Last year it did not.
I don't expect it to be that. Okay. Cause
so if they're 2-3, they'll probably play each
other. Yeah, and okay. I think that would be amazing. That would be great to have that in the playoffs, get a little more bad blood going. As it stands right now, 6-4-2. That's the New York Derby head-to-head in
Major
League Soccer.
Wait, last year it did. Because last year the Red Bulls were 6 and Chicago was 3. Was that right?
Yep.
Yep.
And the Red Bulls beat Chicago and then played Toronto in the next round.
Toronto being 1.
Yeah. Toronto was
nicely
the best
done,
team.
Nicely done,
Davey. Right.
Well, no, it took me 2 times.
Well,
man. Sometimes that playoff format, man, it goes right
over.
There's
somebody yelling at their
phone.
We'll figure it out.
That wrong.
Thursday, Chicago, Columbus, 2 games here for you. 7 p.m. Eastern, ESPN+. Houston, Dallas, 9 p.m. Eastern on Emos Live on Twitter. Because you may be listening to this on a Friday, we're not really going to, quote-unquote, preview the games here, but we're going to look a little deeper into what's going on. And I really think there's some things that we brushed over on the last show. We played the Veljko Panovic F-bomb clip, but I don't think we really dug into that clip and what it means and what their season has become. Because when he says we're bleeping suffering, it's clear that that's very real and that his mental state, I'm not going to say is tenuous, but there is a weight on his shoulders, just on his psyche, and I would expect the entire team's psyche given their form right now. They were in a decent position, at least one that you thought, hey, they might be able to make the playoffs, and then they lost 8 straight from July 7th until now, and they're probably going to lose 9 straight, if I had to guess, just the way they're playing in Crew SC.
Can we tie this back to NYCFC earlier? So I mentioned NYCFC isn't playing well, and they're tinkering around, and is that a good thing or a bad thing? Well, if you look at Chicago and you reference to what happened to them, it might be a bad thing, and I'm going to say what Doyle would say on this show if he were here right now. He would say they overachieved early on, but they changed it up, or Chicago overachieved early on. They changed it up every single game, and this 8-game losing streak is because they changed up every game and weren't actually building towards anything, that they were getting short-term results, sacrificing the future. And I think it's fair to say that
when
Veljko
you say
Panovic,
early on, do you see early on of 2018 or
2018.
Since Schweinsteiger?
2018.
Yeah,
since
so that's what I was confused about.
Sorry,
I was like, okay, for sure they overachieved in 17, and you could argue they overachieved this year too early on just to be in the race with all the injuries they had.
I'm not sure they overachieved in 17.
Yeah,
I think
that
was a third
either.
Seed team with David Akam at his best and Schweinsteiger a year younger and Dax. And, but that
okay, maybe not overachieved, but there was a confluence of factors that obviously were not sustainable because you see what David Akam is this year. Like, You hit a high for a lot of guys.
Fair, but
Solanak,
right? Okay,
Solanak.
No, it's a good point. It's a good point. So anyway, going.
No,
back,
I still disagree with Weeby.
All right,
we
move
continue.
On.
So going to the Chicago point, that you know, fifth is probably rough. You know, fair on where they were, maybe overachieving a little bit, and now they're underachieving. And the question is, are they underachieving now because they had to do things to overachieve? And if they had just tried to go steady and build for the longer part of the season, that they would have been better off. And I'm curious if NYCFC fans, if that concerns them for their own fortunes.
That once NYCFC comes out of this and the games are like, okay, we have to win this game, they don't have, you know, they don't have their A1.
Yeah, if throwing darts,
but
you
they
know,
do.
Do they
Chicago?
Or,
we already
NYC.
Touched. We already hit NYC.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, back to Chicago.
Chicago? No, Chicago don't have an A1 because they don't have a roster that can put out an A1 team in Major League Soccer week in and week out. They go up against Columbus. They go up against either of the New York teams. They go up against D.C. or New England. And I think you go position by position and say they're not the better team. And then what you were saying about Solanak, I think, is a little bit unfair because when you have a good structure and core to a team, it's easier for a guy like Brandon Vincent and a guy like Louis Solanak to play off of known quantities when you know what Schweinsteiger and Dax.
Are we totally wrong about that, though? Isn't a team with Johan Kath, I'm going to, because I know there's Chicago fans screaming at us because they screamed in my Twitter. Isn't there something to say about Kappelhoff at center back, Brandon Vincent at left back, Schweinsteiger, Dax, and Chiani at center mid, Katai out wide, and Nikolic up top, that's actually a top 10 MLS team?
I think the problem is the guys that you're leaving out. Who's starting at center back next to Kappelhoff? Who's starting in goal? Who's starting on the other wing from Katai? That's the issue for this team right now.
But they still have 7
But we talked about weak links.
All-star
caliber
players.
We talked about weak links on this show. And when you look at a team, who's the weak link? You have 1. Okay.
By
maybe
the way,
sometimes
just,
you have 2.
We just
We're talking
Chiani
about 4.
To cut him.
Yeah. Chani's not on
right,
the team.
Right, but entering the season.
Yeah,
Chani
is a tough conversation because you have ability versus production.
Which Chani are you getting?
Yeah.
Which Chani are you getting? Let's go back to Veljko. Bobby, what's this situation? Have you been in a situation like this? I mean, like for Veljko Panovic to come out and curse and use the F-bomb twice in an interview that he knows is being taped and that's going to be disseminated, like that to me says a lot about what's going on internally, the way he feels. He's got his contract coming up. They've biffed in two straight transfer windows trying to get this team in a place where it can just make the playoffs, let alone compete for an MLS Cup. Like, that to me, he showed some cards as to how he's feeling and what, as we, to go back, you know, you're talking about surface level hurt or deep down in your core hurt. Right now, it's clearly deep down in their core.
Oh, so you're saying the two F-bombs he dropped showed his cards?
Yeah, that he's like, pissed off and frustrated.
Yeah.
And that, like, it doesn't feel like it's going to get any better. Like, just the phrase, we're bleeping suffering here.
It looked like, and you could hear the question was like, when you're in this sort and you're in this run, it sounded like he just didn't want to deal with it anymore.
Yeah. It's got to be killing you, I think. That's what the question was.
And he was at his end. And like you're saying, I think that's not just like, I'm done with answering this question.
Right.
It's like, I'm done with dealing with this situation. So I can understand that. And if you're him, you showed that if you were given the right tools, you could be successful. And then it feels like he hasn't been given the tools outside of one real transfer window when they brought in Dax and Schweinsteiger at the same time. And Nikolic, they haven't been given those tools. And this isn't like
– and that's the frustrating
I'm not even
part.
Saying you could have won an MLS in 97 this way, but the reality of it is, like, you need to have quality on the field.
Yeah.
You can't just do it half-ass and expect to win.
Yeah, and that's the frustrating part, because that was – you look back on it. Like, Dax McCarty for $400,000, you went and got a Golden Boot winner who still has – he still has the ability and the chops to score these goals. He's got above double digits right now, but he's just not getting the same sort of chance creation as last year. And you got a World Cup winner in Bastian Schweinsteiger, and you were basically saying, we got two, maybe 3 years with this group. Because if you look at their ages and the points they were in their careers, that's it. And so you can't afford to have – two windows, consecutive windows after those windows, go with just Katai, basically, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's really it if you look up and down this roster. I'm trying to think of who else would be that, like, difference maker that they picked up. And
Raheem Edwards?
I'm trying to think of that difference. I mean, that's a joke. Like,
yeah.
I'm still high on the Raheem Edwards. It's not quite the hype train it was, let's see, like, last year when we were choo-chooing all the way through the season. But it's tough right now for Chicago Fire fans, and extends to a lot of places off the field too. They're in a little bit of an issue. Let's talk about the nightcap here. Houston, Dallas, El Capitan. I think we're all in agreement. Houston are basically done here. 9 p.m. Eastern, Unimas, live on Twitter if you're listening on Thursday. Houston are done. They're not going to the playoffs. They went last year. They had a great run. They pushed and pushed and pushed. Should they be discouraged, Dynamo fans, by 2018? They're going to say, we've been discouraged by pro. I know you're going to say that, so you don't have to send us that email if you're on the edge of doing that right now. But
if you're on the edge of it.
As the follow-up, like the Fire, to a team that got to the playoffs and looked pretty good throughout the regular season, and Houston did better in the playoffs than the Fire did, should they be disappointed?
So I'm going to say no, because I look at Houston and, one, they made a few mistakes along the back line, the biggest one being not actually getting a replacement for A.J. De La Garza. And then moving Machado out there. So there's some question marks along the back line. But when I look at the rest of the team, Elise had good numbers this year. He hasn't been as consistent or productive as you want. He's probably going to get offers from overseas for a decent amount of money. Kyoto is a guy you're going to keep for a while, and he's very good in this league. He's not Piatti or Valeri, but he's very good. Minotas has been very good this year as well.
But still wasteful. I mean, that's
okay. But he's a young striker.
I agree. But at some point, if you, and I'm just kind of playing devil's advocate on you on this, because I love Albert Elise just as much. But at some point, if you're going to be the team that doesn't spend as much money as the other teams, which Houston do not, I mean, they're at the very bottom of payroll. Those chances that you take on a Minotas and you spend 3-4 years building them up to this point, on an Elise, you spend at this point 2 years building them up to this point. Like, at some point, for you to be that playoff team and come good and reach anywhere close to the ceiling that you're trying to establish, those guys have to take the leap from, like, oh, he's just a young striker to, like, he's a consistent difference.
I would argue that you're going to flip Elise this offseason and use that money to bring in a consistent player who then flanks Kyoto and Minotas and makes you a playoff team next year. That's what I'm trying to say. I think Minotas you stick with for longer, and he still has room to grow, but he has grown this year, so you can see it. Kyoto's in his prime, so no one's really going to pay for him. The question mark around this team for next year is Tomas Martinez. Is there more to come from him in Major League Soccer? And a guy like that, he's young, he's learning the league, he's learning the country. So you would hope he can get better. I don't see it, personally, as being an elite MLS chance creator. But that's the whole conversation for me, because I think you're good in goal. I think you're good in central midfield if you can get Cabezas to come back healthy next year.
Again, you ignored that back line, though.
Yeah. Every team in MLS needs to improve things. And
probably the
yeah, but not
line,
every team needs to improve. The single two most important things are to improve.
I'd say like, center forward is the hardest thing to find in Major League Soccer right now.
No, center back. Okay, we're finding this year that if you have an above average center back, you're an above average team.
But you can find above average center backs for
can you?
Less than you can find a center forward.
That's
can
true.
You?
If you do it
theory,
well.
In theory, that's true. But that's the problem is you go back to the in theory part and you look around this league and you look at some of the TAM signings. You're like, LA Galaxy thought they had that in Skelvic.
But the Timbers nope. got two TAM signings and they put together their back line. Like, Red Bulls have no TAM signings and they have strong
center backs.
Well,
that's a different story entirely yeah. with Tim Parker, huh?
I'm just saying, would you rather have Lawrence Simon and Patrick Mullins or Kofi Opari? That's a bad example because he's been good the last few games. And or I'll say Florian Youngworth and
Joseph Martinez
and Nico.
You can't
yeah.
go Joseph.
I can't.
That's cheating.
Yeah, or Nemanja Nikolic.
Nemanja Nikolic is a bad example.
Why? I think it's a perfect example.
Because he's
Simon
not a guy who,
Mullins.
But because he can't create his own chances to any extent. Can we say Josie?
Well, how many in these strikers?
No,
this is another question.
How many
strikers in this league
men.
Can Joseph make his own chance? Yeah, I know he has one goal where he made his own chances. Here.
Yeah, but I would argue that Joseph.
Can BWP make his own chances? Can Christian Ramirez make his own chances?
Okay, so I would take BWP and Youngworth over
First of all,
Simon
Youngworth,
and Mullins. That's
Youngworth was an investment by San Jose, too. Like,
yeah,
that's also a poor
money.
Example. But so you would take BWP and Youngworth. First of all, I wouldn't take I wouldn't take Youngworth and Andrew Wiebe at this point over anyone.
Dude, I don't know.
No.
I'd change the team.
So that Youngworth is a poor example
he
in all
changes
of this. But
cult,
I
too.
Think at this point you have to take the proven commodity center back and find a center forward that works for you, opposed the other way around. Because center backs is too important. It's the Chad Marshall theorem, right? Like, if you have a center back who's dominant, it can set up the rest of your team.
I like that. I like the Chad Marshall theorem. I think we should start using that. Because when you have that rock, like, look, you know, Roman mm-hmm. Torres, he gets hurt, he fades out of the lineup.
But
Kim Ki-hee comes in, you're still rolling. You still have one of the best defenses
but
in the league.
But the example of what you're saying, though, is how much does Chad Marshall cost compared to Manja Nikolic?
A lot less.
Yeah, that's the point. You can go out and find center. If you're saying
no, but,
the Houston
but you
Dynamo
can't go,
aren't
you
spending.
Can't go find a Chad Marshall. That's the point. It's
yes.
Like there's only one
yes,
Chad
you can.
Marshall.
Other people,
there's only
well,
one Matt
obvious.
Beisler. There's only one. Like
you just named five American. You're going to name five American
okay,
center backs.
How many times do those guys move? They yeah. don't move. Those teams hold on to them until the very
but
end of time.
But where do they
because
find them?
Super draft.
Yeah, Matt Beisler was not highly valued. You can find those guys. And if the point
I mean,
of this
you're
conversation,
right in that some sense, like Tim Parker was
this
that
is another
guy.
Conversation
Long,
on how you find them. That's another conversation.
The point of this Let's conversation, though, is that if you're saying the Houston Dynamo don't spend a lot, they have a center forward. That's where the money has to go. If they're intelligent about the way that they scout and the way that they build up their players, they should have center backs. That is more doable on a quote-unquote budget than finding a number 10 and a number 9.
Okay, I'll give you that. I mean, if you look around the league, like – I mean, let's just think about some of the top center backs in the league and where they came from. Beisler, super draft pick, never left. Aiko Parra, journeyman, bounced around, got an opportunity under Vermees. He was. Come
but
on,
was
he was
high,
a journeyman.
He was no, a high
he was
pick
a journeyman.
He was because of injuries.
For sure. His third club.
Okay, fine. You're right about that.
What was the second after San Jose?
No, I think he came straight from San Jose to
KC. He just never
KC.
Played for
the Okay, so journeyman
years.
Was completely wrong.
It Michael
was
Parker,
injured.
A draft,
off, yeah,
a super draft pick
injured.
Guy.
Aaron Long. Up through USL for the
Drew
Red Bulls.
Moore.
Tim Parker, super draft.
Drew Moore,
super draft.
Yeah.
Michael Parker, super draft.
Simon.
Walker
Zimmerman.
Foreign signing. Walker Zimmerman, super
Matt
draft.
Matt Hedges.
Rito Ziegler's been good
super
this
draft.
Year.
Yeah.
Who's a higher
Ziegler's been good.
Yeah, Ziegler's a hit on that side, on like the TAM side. But like I'm trying to think of other TAM hits. Mavingo was a TAM hit.
To be fair, this is true about the world football in general, that there just aren't center backs
yeah.
to be found. So
there
this
aren't
isn't just an MLS
are,
problem.
Yeah.
This is a world problem.
And
as
also,
well.
It goes back to like center backs can be found and talented ones, but like defenders, guys who can defend.
True.
Yeah.
That is the issue a lot of times in Major League Soccer. Like, these guys can pass. They can play the game.
I've also spoken to a few technical directors about this, and they do feel it's the – if you were to think about how to build – and this is going to make some people upset out there. If you're going to think about how to build your academy and what part of your system you need to build out of the academy, it is defenders, or it is Alex Moyles. That in the world market, you can go get a ton of 10s and wingers and good 8s right now, but there's not a ton of hardworking wingers and or center backs or outside backs. So if you think about how to use every part of the allocation system to fill in a roster, that homegrown should be the defenders and the outside backs and the hardworking wingers.
Can I just ask you a question? You don't have to go big on this. I know every example is different, but let's say there is a struggle to find good center backs. Is it easier to play in a three-man back line or having two legit center backs? Because we see teams playing like Ben Sweat at left center back or right center back, which are sort of fullbacks because it seems like there aren't really center backs.
So I think if having three at the back does two things. It, one, allows you to get two forwards on the field without losing the midfield. You can keep three center midfielders and get two forwards on the field. And two, yes, it just makes less space for each center back to have to cover. And the counter to that is it makes less space for a forward to be able to find space in that area. So I do think a large part of having three center backs come back in the world is the fact that there's just not enough center backs who can do the two well.
All right, let's keep it moving here. FC Dallas.
Fans we're not going to talk about
yeah.
the good team.
Yeah, yeah. Portland fans will be mad at us too, maybe, because they always are. But FC Dallas fans have definitely been mad because right now they're like the silent passengers in the quote-unquote
best team
conversation.
Last night they surpassed points per game NYCFC, so they're third in the Supporters Shield race.
Right. On points per game. I mean, I'm a points per game truther just because of the way the standings work out and the way the imbalance schedule goes. So it's like, yeah, you could look at the points, but you should probably just look at what they're getting from every opportunity. It's very close, so it's tight right now.
Mm-hmm.
But they've basically been – ignored is maybe not the right word, but it is close to ignored.
Well,
nobody talks about them.
You made a great point. We covered this on Mass Confrontation, why they aren't getting more respect. And my point was that they're just not that fun to watch. And in 2018, you have so many soccer options on TV in Major League Soccer that are just plain out fun, that if you're not fun, even if you're good, you're not going to get talked about. But you actually had a much better point than
I
did.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm with you on that completely in the sense that, one, anyone who listens to this show knows that this is a national show. We talk about everything, or try to. We're going to get mail off that, too. Like, you don't talk about everything. But
we don't
FC
talk
Dallas,
about the Quakes that much.
That's true.
I was about to say that.
But with FC Dallas, Montreal fans might be mad at us, too, although they blow up on Twitter at any time. FC Dallas has a lot of guys that are like, maybe he's good. Today, maybe he'll be good. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have anybody who's a Joseph Martinez, a BWP, a David Villa, or even, like, honestly, right now, like a Maxi Morales type. It's a lot. It's like, okay, is Rudy going to be good? Is he going to be fun to watch today? I don't know. Maybe not. Is Michael Barrios going to be that guy? Probably not. Is Tesho? No. Is Dombaji? No. And it's not just about them being fun to watch. It's about them being actually impactful as like attacking players. I think you go into the midfield and they're solid and they're good and they're good soccer players. Mm-hmm. But they're not guys that I want to turn the TV on all the time and watch. They're not guys that I say, you know what, I got a choice to make today. It's either I'm going to catch that condensed game or I'm going to watch the whole game and it's Dallas or it's the Red Bulls or it's Dallas and Sporting Kansas City or it's Dallas
and LAFC. But if we go back
to
roster building, if you have two good defensive midfielders, at least two hardworking, intelligent ones, and a dominant center back or two, the other stuff is just cake, right? You can figure that out as you go. So that's another thing to be learned from Dallas here.
And that's actually a good defense of Dallas in the sense of Hedges and Ziegler are reliable. Their outside backs are reliable and sometimes spectacular.
And back to Bobby's
central
point
midfield
from before, Reggie
doesn't
Cannon
screw
homegrown.
Up. Yeah,
like they're creating defenders.
Matt Hedges, you basically didn't develop him, but you developed him into the like. U.S. national team fringe guy that he is. I remember when he was drafted, he was the replacement for your boy George Young.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I remember interviewing, I think it was Shellis at the time, at the Super Draft, like behind a bunch of curtains, and him being like, we think in 2 or 3 years that Matt Hedges can be one of the best center backs in the league. And then to watch that happen was super impressive.
Yep.
Now, Pablo Aranguiz, as we've talked about on the show, could be that guy, the like not maybe guy, the for sure guy, turn my TV on because I know, A, he's going to have special moments, B, it's going to create – like production on the field, which is the combination that you need. But maybe they're better off with nobody talking about them. Maybe they're better off with not having the pressure of like, we're going for the Shield and we're MLS Cup contenders. Mm-hmm. Or last year we're like, we're one of the best teams in the league. This is our year to win MLS Cup. Maybe FC Dallas needed this season where everybody wrote them off. Mm-hmm. Or if not wrote off, just said, we're not that interested. Because it took the pressure off. I don't know.
Mean to say that. Interesting point, though.
Dallas and Houston, Thursday night. If you've watched it, let us know what you think. We'll be back on Monday, or at least these guys will. I'm going on vacation, baby. Friday, doubleheader, ESPN, 8 p.m. Eastern. It starts with Orlando, Atlanta, and at 10:30 p.m. Eastern, LA and LAFC, El Tráfico, also on ESPN. That first game is the all-social media hatred game. A lot of banter between Orlando and Atlanta fans. A lot of entitlement at different times between both these fan bases, by the way. Atlanta fans, you know who you are. We barely talked about Joseph Martinez when he hit 27.
Because it was so inevitable?
Yeah, it was like I think I mentioned it.
Yeah.
And we literally said nothing
about
it.
We didn't discuss it. Because we've discussed it all season. You knew it was coming when he hit like 22.
But he just tied the all-time mark that we've made massive deals about in every other chase. When Wando was trying to tie it, it was a huge deal. It dominated the news.
Because it was like, are they going to get there?
True.
And they barely got there.
True. BWP, same thing. He did this in August.
Joseph's going to score 34 goals this year.
Everybody has their number. Mine's 32.
Mine's 34. He's going to score a goal per game on the season.
If he does that, will that ever be matched? Can that ever be matched? Bobby, this is a podcast. You can't nod.
It can be matched. I mean, we say this about records all the time, that it'll never be broken, but yeah, it could be broken. It's unlikely, but it'd be silly to say it's out of reach.
Okay. This league's in a weird place, though, because like, the style and quality is changing so drastically over short periods of time. So like, the defending is getting better, but the attacking is getting better.
Is the defending getting better, though? I don't think the personnel is better. I don't think the tactics better. And I don't think just the general willingness to defend is getting better. That's definitely gone down. So I do think one thing that's in Joseph's favor for keeping this record is we're in a total dearth of defending right now, and I can't imagine it'll go anywhere but up.
Is it that it's gone down, or is it just that the task with which they have to deal with every game is so much more difficult?
Yeah, both.
Because I don't know that it's gone down. To me, when you say that, and this is just like gut reaction, it's like, you know, old men that are like, it was so much harder in my day. We walked up and down to defend, and attackers cleated us at every opportunity. I mean, I just like.
That's fair. I think that's a worthwhile point, but I can still say it's gotten worse.
Well, it just goes back to the conversation we had before, which is it's a conversation around the world. This isn't just an MLS conversation.
Right.
Goal scoring's up in the last few major tournaments and leagues. Players are better at attacking. Facilities are better, so fields are better. The ball runs smoother.
Yep.
It makes it easier. So I think that all goes into
it. And people just don't like defending anymore.
Yeah, right.
Like, we can't ignore that fact.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's true. What does this season from Joseph Martinez say about the league as a whole, about Joseph Martinez, about, you know, how do we put this in perspective? Because, like, Roy Lassiter's, you put that in perspective, and people are like, well, it was 96, and, like, to be fair, it was, you know, It wasn't nearly as professional as it is now, so it wasn't a huge surprise. It was a different game at that time. Wando's season was just like a lot of factors coming together at once, I feel like. It was the Goonies. It was a blessed year. Everything he hit seemed to hit the back of the net. The timing was right, and then BWP's was a little bit of the same. Joseph's, he's got a lot of PKs. Atlanta create a lot of chances. Mm-hmm. They're a team at a different echelon from an investment perspective than any team before them in this league, at least as it pertains to like transfer fees.
Can I ask you a different question? Joseph 2018 or Jovinko 2015? Which was the more remarkable season?
Jovinko.
I would say Jovinko as well. I just think there's a difference between following up a quasi-dominant attacking campaign and basically willing a team.
Yes, changing a team's history.
Yeah. And what Jovinko did, I think, was more dominant in a lot of ways than what Joseph Martinez is doing.
Joseph has been amazing, but Jovinko was literally mind-bending.
Joseph is dominant, but he's dominant in the sense that, like, he's really good at this. And I'm not saying he's not good at other things, but this one thing.
Mm-hmm. Well,
like, having the chemistry with the guys providing service, making the right runs, and making the runs with a sort of abandon that literally no one else does. Like, he's quicker than you, he's stronger than you, he wants it more than you do, and he's getting great service, and he's just banging in goals. And by the way, Atlanta's getting a lot of calls, so he's getting a lot of PKs, too.
Well, they create a lot.
They do.
I'll plead the fifth on that comment, though. Yeah. I've tried to make that point before, and it didn't go that well. So, I wrote this in the Sunday column, but I had a friend in high school. We used to watch basketball together. I know you guys both watched a lot of basketball, too. And he would yell, whenever the commentators would be like, man, people just don't defend anymore. He would yell at the TV. He would be like, how do you defend LeBron James? If you get in his face, he blows by you. If you drop off, he shoots a three. If you double team him, he finds the open man. And that's just what I feel when I watch Joseph every time. Like, what do? He can literally beat you in every single way. He can run by you if you get tight. If you give him space, he can shoot and score, as we saw last weekend. He can jump over you. He can run by you. That's what I think. I think, how on earth do you stop this guy? Because he can do every part of the game.
You're a former professional defender, midfielder, whatever.
Yeah.
How would you try to stop him? If it's you, what are you doing?
I think... The number one thing that I would work on training before is I don't think enough people bump his runs early. So you know that you want to get tight to him.
But that's the problem, because if you get tight and you don't get the bump, he's gone. Like, is there more inherent risk to that, or you already have the risk?
So there's two parts. That's not for sure. There's a risk to it, but you don't just want to get tight so then you're tight marking him to get to the ball. Like, screw the ball. You both on ball is coming in on the ground and in the air. Like, don't try and beat him to the spot. Just make sure he doesn't get it. Does that distinction make sense?
Yeah,
so if I have to jump with him, I'm not jumping to try and win the header because he's going to jump earlier. He's going to get over me and he's going
to
win it. So I'm just jumping back into him.
And
it looks
push
like
him off
it looks
header.
Like I'm getting the ball. But if I can shove, put him off balance, we can't get the power or the connection.
Oh, see, I was thinking you were saying at the beginning of the run, as that play is developing, and you're seeing Gressel come
in. Early in the runs
too. I'm saying like get on it, get him, bump him off like his ideal line.
Well, yeah, that's what Bobby's saying. He's trying to get to a point. A lot of times you try and beat him to that point. He's saying hit him immediately and as many times as you can so that he never gets to that point.
It's generally one or the other. You can't do both, but I would do one whenever I could. If I'm with him early, then I...
Uh-oh, we got spies, man. People are watching us. I don't know. Is that kind of as the radiator? Is the helicopter radiator equivalent?
I was just going to say, after all this, Bobby's playing with house money. Because in the reality, Bobby's going to get burned by Joseph Martinez on speed. So you step, you try and hit him, and if you don't, then he beats you.
Well, it's
you,
like when the ball comes in, right? To give you an example, when the ball comes in, my first step shouldn't be with Joseph first step going to the ball. My first step should be putting my hip into him. And if this was easy, obviously more people would do it. Like, I don't know how to defend any better than those. Well, that's not true.
Yeah,
Pac-12
Defender of the Year.
thanks for that.
Player of the Year?
That's another.
Well, Bobby's thrown off right now because
sorry,
of the Pac-12 vote.
He's like, you can see there's like Stanford highlights just like
he took me back to my
running
days.
Through his running through his head, yeah.
But yeah, I do think that the defenders are missing some of these technical parts of slowing him down.
What does James O'Connor do now? What should he be doing?
He should be running preseason 2019 starting last week. Like, this team right here that they've put together is a lot of guys in their prime. It's not something that physically fell apart, and it's a lot of guys who are under contract. And so if I'm James O'Connor, I've got the way I want to play and the players that I've identified in this group that I want to be a part of that, and I'm trying to set them up in a way in which, one, they want to be a part of this in 2019 and they're positive about it, and two, we hit the ground running because Sasha Kljestan and Uri Russell are one of the best midfield tandems in the league, because Josue Coleman understands exactly what's asked of him, because everyone on my team knows how to play off of Dom Dwyer, and Dom Dwyer understands his role in this offense and what more he can do for this team as he grows into his prime. So, like, if I'm James O'Connor, yeah, the results matter, and I definitely want to be competitive. I'm not trying to, like, lay down in any way, but you're looking at guys who are 28 to 30 who – you don't want 5 years to develop what you want. You probably don't have that amount of time. But you're not going to try and get rid of everyone once the season's over, because these are talented players in Major League Soccer. There's holes they need to fill for sure. So you're not like set. But the idea for me right now would be I want to hit March of 2019 at a peak position, and I'm starting doing that right now.
To me, this is way more mental for them than it is like physical, tactical, all that stuff. Of course, those play into it, but there's a rot on Orlando City right now. Like, should you want to even be there? If you're a player, if you're a, I don't know, the fans probably want to be there because that's their team. But, like, you saw Justin Miram skedaddle. And it can't be fun to be in their locker room the way it is right now. I mean, you saw those reports from Goff about the dust-up. Now, Bobby, I know that happens in any locker room where you're losing a lot.
Yeah.
But, like, if your players don't believe that this is a place that they can thrive and have success collectively – that's an issue. And somehow, some way, like Dave said, and I think he said it really well, James O'Connor's got to find a way over the course of the next X months to get them to believe that 2019 not only has hope, but can be a complete reversal. Because otherwise, you're going to go into 2019 with just, again, a cloud of doubt over you. And we've seen how they've dealt with doubt and with misfortune.
Can I ask
with
you guys,
bad performances.
Who should they take? So if they're built planning for 2019, David, who should they build around for 2019, meaning who should they play now and who should they have in the lineups? I mean, who are guys you think can help them moving forward?
I think the obvious ones is Sasha.
You think Sasha still?
Yeah. And Dom.
Unless you can find a way to move Sasha.
Yeah.
Unless you can get it.
I mean, what's the price point for which?
But that's the
price. I mean, Red Bull basically gave him away for free. To provide the reference point, Red Bull essentially gave him away for two players that are no longer on their roster.
Well, Tommy Redding's still on the roster, yeah?
Yeah, he is.
I'm just saying. But yeah, you're right. They did give him away for free because they didn't want to pay it. and they basically need to open that up to get Kaku. Like, they had an opportunity cost on the other side where the return from Sasha Kleshchen wasn't as important. Whereas I think for Orlando City, that return is much more important, whether it is allocation or whether it's production on the field. And he can still be a productive player in this league. There's no doubt about it. Like, he could be that guy. But they don't. It doesn't feel like they have the structure of the players around him. I would focus more on the guys that are complete unknowns the rest of the way. Like, should we keep him or should they go? Like, those guys.
Like, Tony Rocha.
I would
PC.
Say more like Josue Coleman. Yeah, okay. But, like, PC is a great example of, like, your depth wasn't good enough. When injuries happen, I mean, you know, Muhammad. Who else?
El Munir,
yeah.
Jonathan Spector.
Spector. What's his health going to be? What's the situation with Lamine Sané? Uri Rosell is a huge question mark.
I'm asking you. It's a question mark, so but I'm putting you guys on the spot.
So my thing with Uri Rosell is I think he's a big question mark, but I actually think Higuita is pretty good.
I agree. So if you have
them both on the roster, I think it's okay, because if you end up having to start Higuita for a bulk of games, as long as you can create a system where Yotun and Kleshchen can shine, I think you're okay.
I actually don't think you can have Higuita, Yotun, and Uri in the same midfield. All spectacular players in there, and maybe all of them.
No, I agree with you. I'm saying,
right? But they just don't fit. You've got to pick
one.
Could
work in like a. It would have to be a diamond, I guess.
No. I'm saying Higuita is your quote unquote sixth man, your bench guy, of that system.
Right now I play Higuita over Rosell.
Okay, that's fine. But that's the point: is those two are fighting for one spot. Yotun's a lockdown starter for me, and Kleshchen is.
Well, I think if you're going to play Yotun, then you should play Higuita, because I think Uri needs passers around him. I mean, he thrived at SKC because he was a single pivot with other pass and move guys. I think we're finding that he really is that narrow of a player. He's very good at being that narrow player, but he doesn't want to or can't do more.
I would agree with that. I think his limitations didn't really hurt him in Kansas City because they had such a good structure around him that he was able to really just say, okay, I'm the anchor in this. I'm the metronome. Put the ball on my feet. I'll get it to guys who can hold on to it. They'll give it back to me. On the defensive side, I just have to cover this little box. I'll be quick to my spot, and I'll be – you know, very predictive of passes, but in the chaos that has been Orlando City, none of that stuff's all that valuable anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, you're just throwing a guy in and he's either going to sink or swim, and for the whole team, it's been sink.
Yeah.
LAFC, El Trafico, we've talked about this one so much.
You just know it's going to be bonkers. Like, you have to tune in and you have to watch for 93 minutes or plus.
Whatever, how many
plus
minutes,
halftime, because that's, like, the nature of this rivalry right now is LAFC is going to take a lead. They're going to feel confident. And then something shaky is going to happen, and Galaxy are going to jump on it and make it a one-goal or two-goal game. And then the Galaxy are going to come storming back, and everyone's going to go, is this going to happen again?
Here's what I wrote about from my column looking into this game. Was
in
that,
case you didn't know, Bobby writes columns.
Well, it's been people were – I don't know.
I know. I'm just messing
Some
with
people
you.
Don't like the double dip. But anyway, LAFC is undoubtedly the better team.
Yeah,
unquestionably the better team. That in no way makes them more likely to win this game. Does that make sense? Because this to me is a great example of the dichotomy of soccer. You can win games by being the better team, or you can win games by dominating the key moments, the moments of magic, the errors. And one team is the better team and a very good team, and the other team is spectacular at moments. And I just find that contrast to be interesting.
All right, that is Friday night. We're going to go to the weekend on the other side of the break. We'll be right back.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental here in the greenhouse, a.k.a. my backyard in Brooklyn. Getting all the city sounds on this one. I think we should do every show outdoors.
In the hot.
And maybe in this backyard, because I feel like the conversation has been flowing.
So what happens when it gets sweltering hot
That's
and
part
freezing
of it.
Cold,
That's
snowing
part of it.
Rain?
That's part of it.
We'd be like the Postal Service.
Look, if you know what? If players got to play in all conditions, podcasters
got
to podcast.
Don't.
And okay, most conditions.
Okay. I'm just saying.
Just, you know.
Why'd the Postal Service come into that?
Because, like, nor whether
rain
nor snow nor sleet nor whatever. They deliver in
all conditions. Yeah, come on.
Don't come at the USPS right now, Bobby.
Not.
You need to back up.
By the way, though, the USPS, not the best here in Brooklyn. We've got
both of you need to
stolen.
Back up now.
I'm just saying. All right, Heineken Rivalry Week rolls on. Of course, we've given you the preview or the lowdown on Thursday and Friday's action and the New York Derby. Let's talk Saturday, Sunday, and we got to start with what are we calling this now? The Canadian Classico.
Did anyone say that?
I don't know. We had a name that we moved on from the 401 Derby.
There was something with French and English that we
liked.
Yeah,
we did.
And
Canadian
Classique.
I
don't think it was that.
Was it
cookie
not that?
Cutter.
Okay, well, I'm sure someone will remind us of what that was. Saturday, 8 p.m. Eastern, TVAS.
I wish I was going to be at this game.
I know. Then Colorado RSL, 9 p.m. Eastern, ESPN+. Plus, Jozy Altidore is not going to play in this game. Disco handed down an additional game suspension for that kick on Alexander Collins, which I can't say I agree with. Didn't think it was deserving of that additional game suspension.
I think we're both in agreement. No?
Disco does seem to be a bit... random?
It's not random.
Do
it's not
sometimes.
Random. It's hard to guess. I will definitely give you that. As someone who owes, I think, Sean Ringrose down in Houston some coffee, which I will just remember, Sean, and I will bring you when I come down there based on a disco bet. I also have a bottle of whiskey up in my cabinet up there that I won from Chris Reifer on a disco bet. That gave me a lot of confidence that I now know is unfounded.
I didn't know you were running this racket on this side.
Dude, that bottle of whiskey is incredible. Like, I have a nice little glass when I watch MLS by myself late at night.
That's sort of depressing.
sad state here. So Josie's out.
Yeah.
Toronto FC, we've talked them to death this year, and I can't do it again. I just can't. Who are the impact? We have not given Montreal nearly enough airtime. So who are they? What is this team?
They're just a generally solid team. They're a team with decent tactical structure, decent players in their team. They've got two or three very good players and a bunch of just solid players, and I think that they are somewhere between a fifth and an eighth place team, and that's pretty fair. Their problems, like we talked about earlier, and most MLS teams' problems, they just don't have a center back to lock it down, and that Samuel Piet is a good but not yet great defensive midfielder who can make up for the deficiencies of center back. The center back play has gotten better, which has coincided with the team getting better.
Fanny and Camacho, actually, once Camacho got healthy, Fanny's been pretty good throughout, and then once that he got back, they're not bad. Like, it's a very serviceable, it's a playoff back line, certainly not a top three.
Yeah, so Bobby mentioned 5-8, and when you look at their schedule the rest of the way, if you went through and just quite simply, and MLS does not work this way, said loss, win,
based on home and away,
and based
matchups,
on the teams above you and the teams below you, they would make the playoffs if they did what they had to do, which is they play DC United, they play New England, they play Toronto. I think they play DC twice. The teams below them, the 6-point games, where you keep that team down and you stay ahead of them, if they win those games, they play Philly as well, they'll get in. But you're never going
to... It's in their own fate, is what you're saying.
Yes.
They control their own destiny
and
because they've got multiple 6-point games against the teams they're competing
against. And if they don't, then they got to beat either Atlanta, New York, or Columbus at some point over the course of the rest of this season to make up for those points.
Are they – let's say they make the playoffs, which I think is a credible theory, assuming D.C. or Toronto don't go on this crazy run. Though D.C. looks like they're going to.
I'm about to piss off Bobby because I know what you're about to ask.
Is it – do you think I'm going to go back to the Houston Dynamo conversation?
No. You're going to ask, would you want to play them?
No, I was going to ask –
I'd rather
in a roundabout way because I'm – like going back to the Dynamo don't have a solid back line, and they don't really have a great like deep-lying midfielder to kind of protect that back line, but they have good attackers, at least in theory, not always consistent. Montreal don't really have a center forward.
No.
They've got a guy – they've got like Mancosu and Jackson Hamill and like I don't know what
Quincy
else.
Quincy Amerikwa could be a nice addition though.
Love it. Yes.
Him on the break
always
with Piatti could be
I don't think he scored a goal in 2 years. I'm always
sure, sure.
In favor
but that goes
America,
back to Piatti, which is what I was about to say. They don't really have a good center forward, or they don't have a dominant one. They got a pretty good back line, at least better than a lot, and they have a difference maker on the wing in Piatti, and they've got one of the best eights in the league in Tyder.
If I was a 3-4 team
so the
in the Eastern Conference, I would rather play the Philadelphia Union in a first-round playoff game than Montreal.
Sure.
That's what I was going to say.
It's fair.
Oh, man, I thought
Bobby
was going to get heated.
Bobby's face – I never, because Bobby's face did not match his reaction.
Yeah.
There was like a sour.
Bobby's face was like, I lost so much respect for you in the last 10 seconds.
No, listen, I said on the show before that the Philadelphia Union's playoff hopes are come down to whether David Akam gets it together. If Akam is at his best, then they have a chance to make a run.
Which
if
is,
not, they're probably not a playoff.
Akam is trying to reach levels of Yachty.
So here's the,
Yachty can do that.
So here's the other two then. Would you rather play in a first-round playoff game, one-off playoff game at home? Would you rather play
you're
DC?
At home. I'm at home.
Yeah. Would you rather play DC or Montreal? Or New England. You could throw New England in there. Not that I think they're going to.
New England.
Okay, then you can't throw New England in there.
What he said. I'd rather play Montreal than DC.
Yeah?
How about this? Let's just add another wrinkle.
Really?
Let's make
I
it more.
Actually,
how about Columbus?
On that one.
I mean, no, Columbus is
really
clearly better than those other teams.
But it's not just being better, because we think Philadelphia is better than Montreal. We're talking
about
a one-game single elimination. Especially with Montreal going on the road where they're going to sit deep. They're going to have Piet just kick the crap out of your number 10. And they're going to wait to get Piatti on the break.
But
I would rather play DC.
One, Columbus has more of a threat against you going the other way across the board. Oh, I guess no one scores goals except Sardis.
Yeah.
Maybe my argument currently
is
falling
apart. But
their
defense is better and their midfield is better, I think.
I mean, this
is the balance between the two.
There's probably a bigger conversation here too, guys, that we haven't talked about enough is that New York was also about getting that number 2 spot because you sure as hell don't want to be in the single elimination game because we can create a scenario where even though you're hosting Montreal at Yankee Stadium, that's a really, really hard game.
I think the last team I'd want to play, depending on what happens, is Montreal just because they have some experience in the playoffs and because they have Piatti and Tyder and the back line is fine. I just think, especially because it's away from home, it would like I'm hosting it. Right,
yeah.
So it suits them. DC, I don't think it will suit them as much, and I don't think they'll have as much like ingrained knowledge of how they want to play away because they're just not doing it. Like, every game they have is at home, and every game they have is this must-win where they've got to kind of, like, throw caution to the wind at times and just go after it.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way in the playoffs.
So to your point, packing it in, they're not really a back – I don't have a lot of confidence in DC's back line. And they also won't have a lot of experience playing that way over the last few months. Yeah. Okay.
That's just my perspective. Here's a question for you. Bobby, I think you were the beautiful mind. And I like to reference your mind as being
a
beautiful one.
What is happening?
I think it just it operates in ways that sometimes I don't understand, but then it always makes me think. You were on the, like, which
– That means a lot, man. Thank you.
Yeah,
I would say that's what I want. There's a lot of people who are like, okay, thanks.
Yeah, you make me think. Giovinco and Piatti, you proposed the, like, who says no deal.
Yeah.
Mine is next 2 years of their career, whose do you want? Who do you think is going to be better? Giovinco's 31, Piatti is 33. They both make a lot of money.
I would say Piatti.
Even though he's older.
Yeah, he just hasn't slowed down the same way Giovinco's clearly slowed down. Like, you can just physically see it from watching them play.
Does it feel like that comes from personality more, that Piatti has a little bit more of the ingrained competitor?
Like, cutting edge?
Yeah, Giovinco takes some more. Now that we're seeing him be less.
Does it also go back to Piatti needing that big pay raise? Like, he wanted the money, he got it this offseason, and now he makes a butt ton?
No,
Giovinco had it.
For a very simple point, it goes down to you stand down on the field and you watch Giovinco turn, and he doesn't break away anymore. And in 2015, if he turned on you, he was gone, and he's not that player anymore. So he could still connect players. He has an unbelievable skill level, and he's fast enough to play in the pro game. Mm-hmm. Like, he's not, you know, don't ship him off and put him in packaging. But he just doesn't have that ability anymore, and Piatti can still break a game open from his own half and make runs throughout, like, you know, through a whole back line and finish. So I would say Piatti. Also, Piatti, I don't really know, like, circumstance we're talking about here, but he's been the guy alone on that team for a number of years. Giovinco has had other pieces that he's been able to, like, work with. So it's like, if I took Giovinco out of TFC and he wasn't playing with Josi and off of Bradley and off of Oso, would he be as successful even right now as he is?
Your question. Give it an answer.
I think I'm in the same boat, and I kind of think a lot of what you said I agree with, just in the terms of, like, the physical aspects of what made Giovinco dominant. And it was that, like, I got on the ball and I turned, or I got the ball and I'm isolated with you, or I got the ball and I have 6 inches, or I have an angle, and I'm always going to be the guy that emerges on the other end of it with you on my backside. And then I just am more skilled than everybody else, so watch me put it in the top corner or watch me find the right pass. I just think, I don't know, I struggle with it because of the age, but Piatti, I think, positionally, it's more straightforward to me how he would continue to be successful and why a team would continue to play through him. Like, whereas I think Giovinco, at some point, because of what's happening in Toronto with what they want to do as far as payroll, and because of the fact that I think Josie's actually the more important attacking piece and the guy that you should be catering to in large part, I just think Piatti will still be in those positions where he's given the responsibility in the open field. And you
just
know,
think about if Piatti played with Josie. And we like did these rumors at the beginning of the season.
Bobby did think about that. That's all he was thinking about.
if he got traded to Atlanta, if they sold Almiron and he replaced him, if he got traded to FC Dallas instead of Mauro Diaz, and like you put him with those pieces there on that back line, which is pretty steady, he'd be. I mean, he's already in the conversation as one of the five.
You already look at his stats this year, and it's under the radar, crazy.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah.
You're just like, wait.
I don't think it would be under the radar.
He's like 10-10.
Yeah.
Can I add another scenario to add spice to this? That was a really good one.
Although close to that as well.
I know, which is also kind of jaw-dropping in a lot of ways, given it the missed chances.
For the rest of this year and next year, so a shorter time horizon, would you rather have Tyder or Bradley?
I mean, if you're Toronto, you want to have Bradley, just strictly based on, like, the culture that you built and the part that he played in that, like I think to get the continuation for them and to try to make this next run, introducing someone who doesn't understand where you were, how you got here, is maybe not the way to go, and also doesn't have the inherent knowledge of now CONCACAF and CCL. But if I'm in a vacuum, I'm just like, okay, I'm a team and I get to have a year and a half of this guy. I would be very, very tempted right now to take Tyder.
He's been good.
Which is not necessarily a knock on Michael, because, I mean, I've been a Michael stan for a long, long time. I mean, I have a Michael Bradley U.S. jersey back in the day.
I would take Bradley because you made it a short time span. So, like, today, I think Michael Bradley is a better player than Tyder. And so if you're talking about the next
You think
months,
today Michael Bradley is a better player than Tyder?
It's tough to say because he's had a bad year, but it's been such a tire fire at times around him. So
I think the other thing is, like, what are you looking for as a team? If you need the kind of, like, cliche version of what people think of Michael Bradley as, a.k.a., like, leader in the locker room, tone setter, you know, anchor at defensive midfield. Like,
which might be some of the things Montreal Impact wish they had.
Right. But a year and a half is tough to, like, integrate that. Or I'm more on the side of, like, okay, well, I'll take the guy who covers a ton of ground, who scores goals out of the eight, and I can go get a six. I don't necessarily need a Michael Bradley to play six for me in this league because I can get something for a much cheaper.
Seems fair to say they're each happy with who they have.
Yeah, for sure.
That neither would switch, but they're each happy with
also what they have. Also, to go back to the original point, if I'm Toronto, this isn't what we were talking about, I would re-sign Giovinco. I would run it back again. So,
for how much?
I don't
For how long?
For a couple of years. For 2 years, if you can get him to, and not like $10 million, and that's probably not what he's making now.
No, definitely not.
But I'd probably go higher than – I wouldn't cut him in half. Like, I'd get close because of what he did for your franchise, because of the face that he is of the franchise, because of the potential that team has if you still put the other pieces together correctly.
Yeah, it's an investment. Maybe gets you CCL. We'll see how it goes for them. Toronto, Montreal, 8 p.m. Eastern, TVAS in Canada, ESPN Plus here in the U.S. Colorado RSL is the 9 p.m. Eastern game that night on ESPN Plus. Of course, everything else going down on that channel as well. I love ESPN Plus. It's super easy for me on Roku, so that's just me. Make RSL a playoff team for me. I know they're in fourth, but the Western Conference all the way down through Vancouver is just it's a shuffle. Make them a playoff team for me. What's it going to take for them to finish the season in the way that they need to?
Here's what I was thinking about on the walk over here. Do we think that Sonny is the most important player in the West playoff shuffle?
We don't. You might.
Well, here's the point. We saw what the RSL crushed Houston for most of the game. Houston had a chance to win, missed some opportunities, but most of that game was all RSL. And RSL, when they are good because Sonny is good. RSL, when they're not good, Sonny generally isn't on the field or is not playing well. I mean, he has a huge margin of difference for that team one way or the other. And if he's playing well, they might be a 3 or 4 seed. And that knocks out the Sounders possibly, that knocks out the Galaxy possibly, that knocks out Portland possibly.
Isn't this question all predicated on the fact that Sonny is often injured or unreliable/unpredictable?
But also capable of putting five games together.
For sure. So if he is your key, that's worrisome. No?
Oh, for sure. No, absolutely worrisome.
Yeah.
But that's not as fun of a thing to think about.
Yeah. You're thinking about the top end. You're like, whoa, if Sonny's out here winning balls.
I'm just flabbergasted by the fact that we have all these players in LAFC and all these players on Galaxy and all these players on Seattle, and this shuffle might come down to Sonny.
I mean, Chad Marshall's more important.
We understand he's more important, but he's also more stable. I mean, part of what you said
gotcha.
Is what makes
so
it interesting.
You're saying to me,
what about Jonathan Dos Santos or Zlatan?
And I'm saying maybe Sonny is the bigger variable in all of it.
You think if Sonny's in his form and Jonathan Dos Santos is in his form, RSL's a better team than the LA Galaxy? Over the course of the rest of this year in terms of who they're playing.
And perhaps more importantly, there's just bigger swings between their good and their bad based on him being good and bad.
Yeah.
It actually feels like Jonah has not been moving the needle on their performances in the last 12 months. That sometimes he plays well and the Galaxy are still kind of mediocre.
But I don't think
he's played well.
That's what
I don't think he's
I don't
been
remember
there consistently
an,
enough.
An instance in his time with the Galaxy where I was like, this dude is bossing this game. This is his game. He is everything he was billed to be as coming from Europe and El Tri. I just don't think we've gotten that. Jonah, so I don't know if you even make that reference where you're like, this is what they are with this great Jonathan Dos Santos.
But
because that hasn't happened. And even if it has happened, everybody else is choking around him on the back line or the Zlatan's not
well,
playing because it's turf.
That goes to Bobby's point then, which is he can't move the needle. And like if Sonny plays the way he did against Houston,
he can move.
Then he can move the needle enough for
He's going to have to play
they,
really well.
They need to finish though. Like, even if he plays at that level.
They're also on the road a ton, and they're terrible on the road.
Yeah, but they couldn't finish last week. They ended up getting a penalty in the 98th minute, which was the correct call, but, like, Beasley's kind of out to sea on it.
Okay.
And
you guys can tell me it's wrong, but I just...
It's an interesting concept. Who's RSL's best attacking player? That's another interesting question, I think, this year. I think last year you would have immediately said... Well, you might not have. You would have been split between Savarino and Rusnak, I think.
And I think this year it's Savarino.
But he's still underachieved his own abilities,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, but Rusnak's farther underachieved his abilities.
What about Joao Plata? Why?
Did you see the stat that Joao Plata has the same amount of goals at this time as last year, and he's taken one-third of the shots? So, like, he just hasn't been as aggressive. Like, you watched games last year, and it was just, like, Plata, like, just, you know, bashing it down people's throat by himself, just ripping shots and making 40-yard runs on the ball and then ripping a shot, and it leads to a corner, and you have possession in the final third and moments like that. And this year, he's just been a passive part of the team. It's just a completely different personality.
He's a hot and cold player and a hot and cold human being. If you talk to players that have been around him, he is sometimes just on top of the world, and sometimes he's not, and he plays that way too.
Yeah.
Rapids have been looking better, so we'll see if they can put up a fight here. RSL will need points, even though they're in fourth, because the Western Conference, top to bottom, is pretty nutty. Sunday, New York, D.C., 7 p.m. Eastern, FS1. Portland, Seattle at 9:30 p.m. Eastern. That one's also on FS1, and it ends Heineken Rivalry Week. Bobby, you're all in on the Atlantic Cup. We talked on Mass Confrontation about which is the better rivalry, New York, New York, or New York, D.C. We both came down on the side of New York, D.C. Where do you come down? Dave?
What is the better rivalry?
You can't ask the New York native.
Yeah, I know. That's a really tough one to ask.
Well, that's why I asked him. That's the whole point, is that he's going to provide a different perspective than we had.
The unique part about this rivalry, being a New Yorker, is it's actually the only one, quote-unquote, rivalry, where except for the Nets and Knicks.
Where
well,
games
I would say,
are frequently played. Because
no, because they,
I guess you
they
interleague
affect
for
each
Yankees
other on
and
their
Mets.
Own league.
Oh, yeah, they're in the same conference.
So the Mets and Yankees are AL-NL, and the Giants and Jets are NFC-AFC, although I wouldn't call that a rivalry. Being a local, I still wouldn't call that a rivalry because I don't care about Giants fans. They're irrelevant to
okay,
my life.
Gotcha. Okay.
and I don't watch hockey, so I can't speak to that. So, like, that gives a unique factor. And then you've got, obviously, a more Jersey-based, at times fan base, but still have the legacy fans throughout the New York area against NYCFC, which has, like, the Westchester tilt because of where they play. And then all of New York City as well. So it's an interesting like geographic rivalry of the way it will met out over the course of the years against people. But
so are you saying it's better or are you not saying it's better? You've like we've gone down the you're like you've mapped out your theory here.
To say it's better, dude, you're a New Yorker, we know how you feel.
I don't know that I feel that way, but I would say that the history really quickly has been really good with like the Red Wedding and Open Cup games and stuff like that. Because that's the thing with DC and Red Bulls is just you have such great like such great playoff game history.
Yeah.
And such big moments that have
it's
happened
not been
against
as spicy recently.
Yeah.
In the Atlantic Cup as it has been in the New York one. Maybe just because of recency, maybe because of proximity. I just my whole thing is like on its face, the entirety of that rivalry, DC, New York, it's just richer. Just because it has more time to be. You know what I mean? Like
yeah, the
if
one
you're
part
smoke a brisket, The Ada. I'm just kidding.
And then you put on French fries for Weavy because that's his healthy lunch for the day.
Dirty fries.
I did have a broccoli salad. Thank you very much. Has the great potential, though, and something we talked a lot about the last 2 days is the homegrowns. And, like, if you've got seven Jersey dudes and 12 homegrowns on Red Bulls and eight New York City kids on NYCFC, like, that's a whole different plane to create a rivalry.
I also want to say the New York has been watered down since Vieira left, because one of the things that was cool about that rivalry. What?
Yeah,
it's still been
super
watered down. Yeah, because the thing that was cool about it is that they were contrasting ethoses within the club.
Right.
You had the Red Bulls high octane, then you had NYCFC pass and play in this like beautiful game, and it was cool to watch those two mindsets collide.
Yeah.
And now you just have two. I don't even know what to call what last night was.
I also think you had in that case with Vieira, like, you had this kind of inherent tension that he entered the rivalry into because New York Red Bulls had won every game so far. And then in his very first game, he had to, like, stick a 7-0 in his craw and just eat it.
Yeah.
And so you had a different dynamic between the head coaches than you do now, where it's kind of like, oh, well, we're now figuring it all out. And, like, okay, well, Armas lost his first, drew his second. He didn't have the kind of swagger of Jesse, who was like, yeah, New York is red, don't even play this game, like, blue side GTFO. Now it's a little bit more even. And I don't know that that's actually – I don't know. It was plenty spicy last night, I guess.
So does DC need to win this game? We know that it's a rivalry.
They don't need to win this game.
They've got a lot of home games. They've got a lot of points they can get at Audi Field. Do they really need 3 points?
No, they don't need 3 points. But I think they have a decent opportunity to get 3 points and to get a marquee win that gives them even more credibility than they've already collected over the last couple
weeks. How many marquee
wins
do you want from this team, dude? Didn't they already get their marquee win?
Didn't they already have
their moment?
The Timbers at home?
Is that the win we're going with?
The Rooney moment.
That's against Orlando City in the last second of a game that if you're any good, you should win.
You don't think that was their over-the-hump moment?
It wasn't a marquee win. It was a dramatic win. But it wasn't a win in which you said, okay, this team, quality-wise, against good teams, can perform. Lucho Acosta against New York Red Bulls is dominant as opposed to against teams that aren't quite as good.
I think marquee wins are overrated. I'm just going to say that. I'm going to throw that out there.
Here.
Marquee wins are overrated.
Marquee wins are like the entire basis of the postseason.
You're also out here talking about these teams that have these soft stretches of 5-6 weeks where your schedule works out well and you get wins, but it's not real. Getting marquee wins means that those things are real.
No. It means getting a good win. That's different than getting a marquee or a statement win.
They're very different things.
Any win you get in the playoffs is
by definition a marquee win. And if you haven't proven that you can get those, then you're the Philadelphia Union and you're bye-bye. Well,
then you're just getting a win or a good win. But the word marquee is
overrated. Just to throw out there, DC United plays Atlanta. They play Red Bulls again. They play NYCFC twice. And they play FC Dallas. So they've got plenty of potential for a marquee win.
Here it comes. Is now the time where I transition it right to Seattle and ask you whether they got any marquee wins in the 6 games that they've won in a row? They're going for 7 against the Timbers. Cascadia, baby. Providence Park, 9:30 p.m. Eastern on FS1 on Sunday. Bobby?
You're just throwing it up there for me to take, huh? Yeah, so there's definitely a question to be had where the Sounders are on a 6-game win streak. Longest win streak in franchise history, one away from the MLS record, if I believe.
I think you're right.
Or something along those lines. Yeah, there's only been one win streak longer than 6.
Winning 7 games in a row would be a good thing. Let's just leave it at that.
But there's also a conversation to be had where were any of the wins that impressive? Meaning, was their win streak the same as Orlando City's and Montreal's and Portland's last year when Portland got first in the West? Meaning that
and Portland
it's
also had a six-game win streak this year too.
Correct, but sometimes these win streaks look good in the moment, but then you just get exposed when you play good teams.
Boy, I'm puzzled right now because you just told me that
marquee wins. That's what I was just saying.
No, you guys are saying marquee wins like it's a statement win. Sometimes you beat a good team, sometimes you beat a bad team. If you beat a good team, it means you're more likely to beat another good team. If you beat a bad team, it doesn't make you more likely to beat a good team.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say, is that by beating a good team, you've shown us that you have that capability, and that's what matters in the playoffs. Either way, look, the Sounders have a test here, and they have an opportunity to prove it.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
Yeah,
that's fair.
I think we were like...
Perhaps I'm due for an apology. I was about to say,
we were ships in the night.
I'm sorry.
I don't know. I think I said one in the hand, one in the bush. So
we can agree statement wins are BS.
So
marquee
Sounders,
wins are a thing. Okay, statement wins are BS.
The Sounders' schedule, though, they were man up. They beat Vancouver. They beat San Jose on the road. They beat NYCFC at home. on a Sunday when NYCFC flew after a Thursday night game in Orlando. Then they beat Minnesota at home. They beat FC Dallas, which was probably the biggest one, but FC Dallas got a red card.
And FC Dallas beat them in expected goals.
And then the LA Galaxy played an LA Galaxy 2 roster last week and got smoked 5-0.
Yeah. I mean,
so none of them, to Bobby's point, the six-game winning streak
you
is
could
impressive.
You could expect the Chicago Fire to also go on a six-game win streak.
I would not expect that in any way.
But you also wouldn't be shocked if it happened.
I would be shocked if that happened.
You could see Orlando. I mean, that's basically what Orlando did.
Does the Chicago Fire have Nico Ladero? Do they have Chad Marshall? Do they have Stephen Fry? Do they have Christian Roldan? I mean, I know they have quality players. Okay, let's go back to the Sounders and Portland. Portland had that 50-game win streak. Or not win streak. I always 15-game unbeaten streak with the 6-game win streak to start it off.
You didn't even say 15. You said 50 on that
one.
Did I? Yeah, it made it sound like they had a 50-game win streak.
All right. Let me get a drink of water here and just get regrouped.
That'd be a season and a half. That'd
Whoa,
be crazy.
That would be crazy. Good math.
Because you don't count playoffs, obviously.
How many marquee wins would be in that?
Portland have lost three straight. That's the point that I was trying to make after playing pretty well. So they had this 15-game unbeaten streak, and they are in sixth place in the West.
But they have, like, three games in hand on everyone else.
But they've lost three straight games, and they're playing a Seattle team in this game in which they could lose four in a row, though they're pretty good at Providence Park. And sometimes form at the end of the season is what dictates success overall rather than your 15-game unbeaten streak in the middle. I'm just saying, do the Timbers have a reason to be concerned right now heading into this game? Is it, for them, a must-win for a lot of different reasons? Playoff place, rivalry, certainly, but also like the long-term repercussions of losing four straight games at this time of year and having to go back to the drawing board a little bit because Giovanni Savarese, kind of like you were saying Dome Trent had done, Bobby, has shuffled a little bit. He had the A1. He had the this is our way to get results, and they got him over those 15 games where they defended credibly, had their couple of key attacking pieces get timely goals, and didn't lose for the better part of a couple months.
Yeah, but Gio went at plan 2 when he had a plan 1. Dome went to plan 7 before he had a plan 1. So that's the difference.
New York City didn't have a plan 1.
Yes, New York City had a plan 1. Patrick Vieira created it. I don't know why he keeps saying that.
Yeah, they had a plan 1.
Dome Turan came in and plan 1 already existed. He didn't have to do anything.
But he blew it up right away.
Like, well, he didn't blow it up. He's looking for plan 2 because he already knows what exists.
Do you think that they could revert back to plan 1 right now?
Yes.
Okay, interesting. Maybe that's how we should have. Interesting. It's a good
no matter
guys,
where we go.
It doesn't matter where we go. We're talking about NYCFC. Yeah,
it doesn't matter. Back to the blue side of New York. What do you think of Portland?
Yeah, I think Portland's going to be fine. Yeah, 3-game losing streak, but overall, they have a thing they're really good at, and there's nothing that says they can't go back to doing that, and I very much expect them to go back to doing that against Seattle, whether it's three in the back and the two defensive midfielders in front or two in the back and three defensive midfielders in front of them. Either way, they're going to restrict the crap out of those key spaces. They're going to make it hard for Ladero and Roldan and Rui Diaz to find space, and Portland's going to be fine.
All right. Cascadia finishes Heineken Rivalry Week. It is incredible how many of these games have real like playoff implications outside of just the basic bragging rights that go into these things. Stay tuned. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, all throughout the weekend, all the coverage on MLSsoccer.com. Go download that new MLS app if you don't have it already. iTunes Store, Google Play is a spot for that. We're going to go to break. On the other side, mailbag.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Down to Georgia, he was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental in the Greenhouse, finishing things off in my backyard into the mailbag. 401-206-0MLS is the hot take hotline. Call us, text us, but really just text us. Honestly, that's the best way to do this. Extratime at MLSsoccer.com is the email, and then you can tweet at us as well.
You also
at Extra Time Radio.
Don't have to ask us a question. You can just send us a thought or a comment, and we can I'll create a question off of it. We'll just agree with
we'll
you
just
or
talk
disagree
about it. Yeah, we'll just react to your take.
It's like you're part of the show.
Exactly. This is honestly usually the mailbag is the most fun to do. We do have to mention here, and you've probably seen it, the new crest for Austin FC. There goes the helicopter. Make whatever you will of that connection right there. Austin FC is Andy Precourt's venture down there. They revealed the branding on this one, and they've gotten some approval from the city council, I believe, to build that new stadium. Crew SC, Save the Crew, all involved as well. Go check that out if you'd like. I will just say this because I know we haven't really been able to talk much about this for a long time now, and we get the emails, we get the texts, we get the tweets, we hear you. However this ends up, I hope that Columbus continues to be a presence in Major League Soccer because of their originality here, because of the history, because of what the fans have given, because of the rivalry impending with Cincinnati FC. So even if this Austin FC thing works out, which it looks like it'd probably be cool if it does, stadium renderings are always cool, big plans are always cool, I hope that Columbus finds the local investors, the path forward, whatever it is, to keep them in Major League Soccer. We'll see how it all plays out. Of course, keep you updated if there's anything bigger coming up. Let's hit the mailbag.
Paul Feldman, while I still maintain that Bobby is a baby, he shouldn't be uncomfortable that he is being mentioned by coaches. He should be happy. It shows that he's on the radar and building up his brand like old man armchair. What he really needs now is a catchy name. Perhaps the ETR listeners can help him out. Personally, I don't have anything in mind. I will say that whenever I see Bobby in a video, I always think to myself that he looks like a pirate.
My girlfriend actually goes with the, is it NSYNC or Backstreet Boys? You know the guy with like the, he's got facial hair. No, not Joey. Not Joey Fatone. I know who Joey Fatone is. Everybody knows who that is. I think it's, I don't know. I'll go find it and tweet it out. Bobby's not amused by any of this though.
Bobby, are you ready for another email then?
It's a podcast. You have to say it.
I got nothing to say about Paul.
Taylor from Ithaca. I was pretty hesitant at first, but after seeing Philly versus NYCFC in Colorado with Acosta and the Diamond, I'm convinced Bobby Warsaw is the analyst slash critic MLS neat. LA Galaxy sell their soul to try and buy their way out of the wooden spoon race to the bottom while putting Zlatan at risk for a herniated disc from trying to carry the team on his shoulders. Meanwhile, Philly stays relatively tight wallet with their signings and build from their youth and start to look like they could be winning Supporter Shield in a year or two. Bobby, you got love, you got hate. That's all you want
yin
in life.
Yin and yang, man.
You just
yin and yang.
As long as you cause people to care.
Yeah.
Weeby okay. only gets hate.
Yeah,
on Monday, August 20th, Andrew from Crown Heights read two of his emails. I wish Andrew had his own.
No, I read one. It was just a two-part question.
I wish Andrew had a bi-weekly podcast that lasted about an hour and 20 minutes long so he could pontificate more, because apparently he needs more time to hear the somber tone of his own voice droning on and on and on.
Whoa.
Boom. There's more to this email I don't even
need
to read.
You know, I'm both amused, but I'm also my eyes are kind of watering right now. I'm not saying I'm about to cry, but that was a burn.
Yeah.
That was good.
You got rocked. And then Asa in Seattle gets me and says, David, your affinity for pickled cabbage explains a lot, but sauerkraut needs to be lacto-fermented. None of this vinegar-soaked madness that gives me gas. And he wrote a GIS.
Wait, gives him gas?
Yeah.
Oh. I thought he was like actually talking about his flatulence in an email to Extra Time
That
Radio.
Was the best comment we've ever gotten, though, when you were going back and forth on Twitter.
I got shredded on Monday for saying
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you're sauerkraut now.
You know what? I'm embarrassed. I'm not going to lie and say that I should reevaluate the person that I am and the things that I know. Scott Treffs, St. Simon's Island, Georgia. Would it be a good idea or a bad idea to play the third derby match at a neutral site somewhere still within the cities of L.A. and New York City?
I kind of like that idea.
Yeah, that's cool.
Where would we go, though? That's the question. Like, would maybe, I mean, because in L.A., the Coliseum you can't go to because that's basically LAFC. I mean, literally you could, like, throw a rock from Bank of California Stadium and hit the Coliseum.
Yeah, so then you're going out to Pasadena.
Yeah, you're probably
Rose
going Bowl. To – which is cool because that's, like, there has some history there with the Galaxy early on, with, you know, 94 World Cup, with U.S.-Mexico a good bit. I kind of like that. I think you like, you know, kind of like Stanford does it with Stanford Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
You move to somewhere a little different, bigger capacity, mm-hmm. has a different feel to it. I don't know if I've never been to the Rose Bowl, but maybe has a good tailgating setup.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds cool. What about New York? Because, like, taking it out to Jersey to MetLife is not the route.
Well,
to
then
me.
There's nowhere else to really play. You could play at Citi Field, and that's kind of it.
Right. So then you're sticking with what you got. Red Bull Arena, Yankee Stadium. But
it's a cool idea, though.
Yeah, in L.A., I'm on that. It won't happen. I can't make it happen. But I can dream.
You could play it at MSG and just play inside, you know?
Actually, I'd be down for like a futsal version of that rivalry.
Hey, guys, last show in the mailbag, you responded to a question about a mini cup between only the original 1996 teams. I've actually been tracking this very thing since 2015, and I plan on working through earlier years. Someday you can see the results at MLS96cup.com. Please share. And, of course, he will. This is Quinn Hovey. So he goes through the whole things. The 2015 winner was Columbus Crew SC. 2016 was the Colorado Rapids. 2017 was Sporting KC.
This is a bummer. I wish you wouldn't have told us that. Yeah. I would have loved to try to guess that. But, you know.
Like you had would have had any reference point.
Well, trivia tells me otherwise. By the way, we're trivia's still here. Nick Rosano couldn't make his way out to Brooklyn, but he says he has some good questions for next week. I won't be here, Dave, so you can get your numbers up.
Stop.
I'm just saying. So you can.
Did you hear what happened the first time? Mm-hmm. I lost 3-0 to Weeby. I basically laid all the groundwork, and then he would come in and just pip the answer.
That's not the way it happened.
That's exactly how it happened.
You guessed a lot, and then I got it right.
I was in the zone.
Yeah.
I'm thrown off, and I can't deal with this. Wilson Wise, first of all, I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller, so we appreciate that.
Did he call, or did he?
No, it's a term.
Okay.
It's a concept.
Okay, I'm just making sure. Just checking.
Weeby oftentimes asks, what will Bradley and Altidore's legacy be? And I always answer him, but he can't hear me from my car, so I decided to write in. Personally, I think their failure to qualify will taint their legacies, and I think they deserve it. When Alexi Lalas gave his epic rant, which we use in our intro about tattooed millionaires, both Bradley and Altidore gave answers that didn't serve their cause very well. Bradley said one of the recent sayings that I've seen that I like a lot is the lion doesn't care about the opinion of the sheep. I'll leave it at that. It's pretty fitting. The USMNT had qualified. He could have gone on to be the lion in history, but they failed, and they therefore are so-called the sheep. Altidore gave a trite answer in a tweet and says, I don't even have tattoos, as though he wasn't a part of what Lalas was saying. These are, excuse me, were the leaders, and they failed. They failed their team, they failed us as fans, and it should and will continue to follow them. Had they owned up to their failure in the qualifying process, up to that point, we may have done better, because it's important to remember it wasn't one game in Trinidad and Tobago when Lalas gave his rant. They were fourth place with two games remaining in the hex.
Yeah, look, Trinidad was the final blow to a qualifying process that had a lot of bad symptoms. I mean, that's why Jurgen Klinsmann was gone. That's why Bruce Arena came in to try to fill those cracks. I did the lion and sheep comment that Michael made in that Athletic article, I believe, by Paul Tenorio, and he's been killing it lately. That did strike me the wrong way as well, but I just felt more like he used the wrong saying in that, and I also don't think that either of those guys are guys that are going to come out in the public sphere and actually share, like, their deep, like, you know, going back to what Bobby was saying, surface feelings versus core feelings. I don't feel like those two guys are going to come out and share, like, some of that core stuff, which we got in Tenorio's article. But I thought the lion and the sheep comment was the wrong comment to make, because that doesn't apply here to me. Like, certainly nobody's in the locker room with you. Nobody has to go through what you go through. Nobody can identify with what you've been doing in that sense, but you still have a greater responsibility with the national team than you do to a club team or to yourself in a lot of ways, I think. There's different stakes there, and I just think saying, well, we shouldn't care about what, unless you're just saying strictly the haters, if the sheep applies to the fan base, okay, that's not good, but if it's
the
just
people
the
that
haters,
are booing
I
you
get
at
it,
games.
I get it. I get why you would say it.
I'd be interesting just to hear what other people have to say, because the reality of it is there's no right and wrong answer, and their legacy is created by the fan base. So it's created by you and whatever it is that you're thinking. We got 5 or 6 emails about Kamar Lawrence playing a full match yesterday. Mm. He pushed out at Anton Tinnerholm after a play in which he was talking to David Villa, and Tinnerholm tried to get in the way, and we got a few people taking the Metro North home after the game wearing blue jerseys who were pretty frustrated with that. Did either of you think it was a red card? My instant replay
is the
experts.
Metro North comment there like the equivalency of the Jersey Boys TIFO that NYCFC did?
Probably.
Yeah, I like it. It's good.
I'm so deep in it, I don't even know.
Like, well, I mean, you'll look at that on instant replay, I assume. I'll be on vacaciones, so I will not be. I thought that if you look back on the replay, you could probably make a case for violent conduct because he's in the neck area, and anything other than, like, what are the words there? Negligible contact, head or neck.
You have to make intentional contact with the face. Well,
yeah,
it's not.
Or neck, I think.
What precedent has shown is that if you go for someone's chest and you slide up to their neck or head, that it's actually not a red card because you went for the chest.
And that's what you think he did?
Yeah, I thought that he was just intending to, like, give him a chest shove.
I'm okay with the way that went down. I'm also okay with the red card to Ebenezer Afori, which neither of you two are okay with. So feel free to have your...
It's a horrible call.
It's a horrible call. I agree with Bobby. Everything Bobby said about it, I agree with.
Well, Bobby said one thing, which is it's a horrible call.
And I agree with
that. You can't bring the text thread into
this. They were both in stride together. Mm-hmm. Afori's trying to get around him. He does not stamp on the back of Bradley Wright Phillips' legs. They're in stride, and he steps down and accidentally lands on Bradley Wright Phillips. It's not dog so. So it's not that.
It's embarrassing.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing for that game that we think, as anyone thinks, that the red card, there's nothing reckless, nothing excessive to make it a red card. It wasn't dangerous. Things happen.
It was dangerous.
No, it wasn't. He was in a running motion.
Dangerous.
We could go run right now, and I could run into your stud up, and it would be dangerous. But it's not your fault. You don't deserve a red card for it. It's embarrassing that was given as a red card.
Brian in Portland, if you could have three non-American MLS players magically become eligible for the USMNT 2022 cycle, who would you choose and why? The obvious one is Davies, but let's exclude him.
These are MLS players
of this exercise. Yeah.
I wish I would have had this question before, because that would have made prepping it a lot easier.
Oh, wow.
I'm already racking my brain. We're going 2022. We're going 2022, so these players need to be ones that are either entering their prime or will still be in their prime heading into that. Positionally, do we have spots where we're
like... Okay, let's just... Joseph Martinez is in. I think that's obvious.
Is he going to be 30 at that point?
Joseph Martinez?
Yeah. No,
he's going to be like 27.
Yeah, 2022. It's 2018.
Now.
Yeah, he'll be like right in the beginning or middle of his prime.
He still would be 30 then.
30-ish.
I think he's like 23 right now, maybe 24.
So I think Joseph
is center forward the spot where you spin that bullet? You have three?
I mean, if a guy's that good and stands up that well compared to everyone else, I think you have to.
Would you not go Almiron?
You could go both. You get three.
That's true. You could go both. Would you go both? Is that where we're headed with this?
I don't know.
Joseph's 25.
Okay. So certainly you go Almiron then. Almiron is your number one overall pick, so to speak. I'm sad that you had to take Davies out, because he would definitely, I think, be that other pick.
Joseph would be 29 when you get to the World Cup. This is for
I'm not saying that's over the hill. I was just asking if that matters.
I'm not saying it changes it. I'm saying now you have to do a little more consideration, no?
For a 29-year-old?
How about... For positional need, Milton Valenzuela, the left back for the group.
That's a good call. It's a good call.
No one's excited about it.
I mean, nobody's excited about it, but it might be the right move. You know what I mean? To like find the gap.
It feels like we're picking the overage players for the World Cup team, where it's like you don't always pick the sexiest player. You just kind of pick that guy that fills the need.
You're saying for an Olympic team?
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're scratching around here on your brain, I know how this goes. We could just open this up to the fans. We could say, hey, next show, send them to us. Let's do that. 401-206-0MLS. We've been talking long enough. It's time to enjoy this weather here in the greenhouse. Hope you enjoy your weekend. Heineken Rivalry going down from Thursday all the way through Sunday. All the listings at MLSsoccer.com. I am going to be braving baby showers and or family time to make sure I get these games in.
Shout out to Taylor Buvos for our song for opening this segment.
Oh, yeah, that's another point. You can suggest songs that we can play, because normally what happens is that we finish the show and Dave says, what song should we play? And then Bobby leaves the room because he doesn't like music. And Doyle suggests something that's old and stodgy.
And then gets mad at me for weeks because I don't already know the
correct
old, stodgy, random
correct
thing he
and then
said. But I will say on this.
I cheat and go to Pitchfork.
Yeah, on this one, Taylor Buvos actually wrote his own set of lyrics to the Devil Going Up to Georgia. I don't think it'll do justice if I read it out.
So you have to sing it.
I can't do that.
Okay.
That's not possible.
How about Ben Barrett?
I'll tell you the title is Barco Went Up to Georgia.
That's...
Instead of the devil.
Okay. I think that's where we're going to end this thing. Have a good weekend, everybody. We'll see you on Monday.